Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am super excited. I'm going to get to talk wool with Angela Lawrence, who is a fabulous appliqueer, and she also has been playing with wool and has a new book out on it. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Angela, this is really great. I love your book.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to visit with you today.
You know, let's do a little back history, because you told me that you have sewed for a long time since you were a child. But how did you get into quilts? Did you have them in your family?
You know, and not really, not to start with. And you know, yes, like everybody else, I kind of grew up with that needle and thread in my hand, and made my own clothes, made my children's clothes, and I even kind of dabbled with making quilts for the children's beds and things. And then I kind of knew I always wanted to get into it. And so I took a couple beginning needle turn classes, and I loved the look of, the applique quilts. Mm-hmm. And then in the late 80s, we relocated, I guess more like the 90s, we relocated in Minnesota, and I walked into a neighborhood quilt shop and just to get some inspiration. And I walked out with a part-time job working on weekends, and and from then on, I was just really hooked to it, and started teaching needle turn applique classes there, and that's kind of how it all started.
Oh, that's so funny. You went in for inspiration and came out with a job. That's like...
Right. And I knew some things about quilting because I had taken a couple quilt classes, but I really learned a lot when I, started my little part-time job.
Right. So were you creating your own applique designs right from the beginning, or did that take a little bit?
I kind of was, because, as soon as I did start working, I was an elementary teacher before we started having children. And so I started teaching the beginning needle turn classes at the shop I was working at. And I did. I started to draw my own designs because there were certain techniques that I wanted to teach, for each class. And it just seemed easier, if I reinforced those techniques with my own designs. So I kind of started at the very beginning.
That's really neat. I think that there's just that whole segment of people that once you find out you can draw with fabric, it's like that's your medium. It becomes it. I want to talk a little bit about handwork before we talk about wool. I also do hand applique, not as much anymore, but that's how I started out. How do you encourage people to get excited about handwork? Because most of the time, people love their machines and want to sit there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first of all, the beautiful applique quilts, entice people. And then if they end up taking a class of mine, there is some interest there to begin with. They're at least curious about how to do the needle turn stitch. And then when I do get them in class, they see, I do the demos, they see how easy at least I make it look, because, I've been doing it for so long. Mm-hmm. And I think they realize at that point that, if with time and with a little practice that they can do it too. And it's not really as hard as sometimes, sometimes it's made to seem to be. And also too, they learn that it's very portable, so that there are different opportunities to do their needle turn applique when they can't always be at the sewing machine. And so in some ways it can be as productive as their time at the sewing machine.
I think that's really true. It's like all of us like to make, and we don't always have a chance to haul that thing, that machine, with us, and we can still make somewhere else. Now, your shapes are just gorgeous. I love your Christmas ornament series. They are so nice.
Oh, thank you. I love there's so many wonderful fabrics that we have now. And so a lot of my designs, I use larger scale shapes because of all the wonderful fabrics that are available now with the large motifs. And, I encourage my students to look at fabrics in a different way, and to, look at possibly fussy cutting of fabric, by deciding what motif to use in the fabric and cutting your shapes accordingly. So it's a lot of fun.
You know, those kind of shapes lend themselves so well to wool. So I'm sure that that was part of the reason you got hooked on wool, because your shapes are just gorgeous. Big leaves, and I love the pineapples and the birds. So tell me, how did you, how did you put together what you wanted to put in your wool book?
The reason I really got into wool was, again, because of that love of handwork. And now with all the beautiful, bright wools that are available, it just seemed natural that that would be, you know, my next step. And, you know, I love pattern. I love shape. And right now they're in our decorating and, you know, wall coverings and everywhere. There's so much repetitive pattern. It's all about pattern and shape. And I wanted that to be reflective in my book. And so you do see a lot of that from the little I with a set of 8 coasters, and they have a little medallion pattern on them, to my large lapsites quilt, which also is just sort of the same repetitive design with just fun medallion patterns.
So, you know, how did you go about figuring out, like, let's talk about the carousel circles, because that one is layered. They're just amazing. I love the shapes. They have different sizes. You know, since there's a lot of depth there with the wool, you know, you've got layer upon layer of wool. How do you handle that for bulk?
Well, first of all, when I do something like that, to make it easier to handle, you're doing each circle separately before you sew it on to the background piece of wool. And, you know, there is a little bit of bulk there with wool, but it kind of adds texture and dimension, which is the kind of the neat quality of wool. Sometimes I am using a fusible on the back of my wool if I feel like the wool has a looser weave and that it's going to fray a little bit more than I want it to on the edges. And if I do use a fusible, I use soft fuse. It's a really nice quality fusible that you can use. It's lightweight. And when I, trace my design onto the fusible, I window it and I cut out the inside. And so it's just fusing to the edges of the wool, which also helps, with the thickness. But it's just a nice fusible that you can just needle through. And it does help to, secure those edges.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, because I window with my applique for cotton, and so it does reduce the stiffness, any stiffness, an extra layer that would be there, particularly when you're doing this by hand and you have to needle through all of that. You know, speaking of fraying, which you mentioned just briefly, wool doesn't fray very much. Most of it's pretty tight. But how do you handle, you have a tip for handling like points, on stars or leaves and things with wool?
I kind of do. And again, sometimes if I feel like it's going to be, a wool piece that's going to fray, it doesn't happen too often, I will use a fusible. But if I'm not using it and you do get to the point, and sometimes some of those edges do want to fray a little bit, but, I put a stitch directly on that point. And sometimes when I do, like when I'm doing the blanket stitch, after I take that stitch that kind of keeps the wool from, curling, I'll take another little stitch, like almost right underneath that point into the background fabric. And that kind of secures that blanket stitch so it doesn't have a tendency to roll over the wool. It stabilizes it.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, that's probably, points no matter where are really the thing to master, aren't they, Angela?
Yeah. That's absolutely true. Even with, needle turn, it's like, how are you going to get all that seam allowance into that little point?
Right.
But,
right.
There's little tricks to it.
Yeah, there are. There's always tricks. And you have other books, too, which are on-hand applique. So if people have those or want to look for them. I want to talk about, are you doing all wool to wool, or are you doing some wool to cotton? Like, are you using cotton sometimes for the base?
Absolutely. And that's another fun thing about my new book. I love mixing textures. And so I do have some projects that are done wool to wool. And then I have projects where it's the wool applique on the flannel background, the wool applique with silk. and I also have wool applique with cotton background. And it just, I just love the different looks and the dimensions of layering those different textures.
The silk sounds amazing. How is that to work with?
You know, it's not bad to work with at all. What you can do, well, you know, I always encourage my students, first of all, that whenever you're doing applique with a cotton background, anything that's going to ravel, you know, I always tell them to oversize your background fabric and then cut it down to the unfinished size when you're ready to put your piece together. But, you know, with the silk, it really ravels a lot. So if you, you know, if you like, you can use a non, like a woven fusible interfacing, and you know, you can iron that on the back of the silk, and that stabilizes it a little bit more, and it helps reduce the fraying. But silk is wonderful to work with.
You know, I haven't really tried that. I think I have some, but I haven't tried it. I like the idea, though, that you use it as the background. It must have a gorgeous shimmer to it.
It does, and it really looks wonderful. The contrast with the warm, you know, thick wool, and then the shine of the silk. It's just a really neat, you know, really gives it a really neat dimensional look.
Now, you have a website. It's called Applique After Hours. I love that name. How did you come up with that name?
Well, actually, my husband came up with that name because, well, my husband and I, we've been married 35 years, and we have 6 children. And so the only time I really had quality, quiet sewing time was in the evening after the children were settled down for the night. And so, you know, I would stay up very late, working on my designs and my applique. And so when we decided to start our pattern company, my husband said it needs to be called Applique After Hours because that's when you do your most productive work. So, and that's how that originated.
It's perfect. I think, you know, I think everybody can relate to that because you might have a day job and you're coming home to do this in the evening. That's what I did for years. You know, it's like,
exactly.
Oh, so much fun. Now, can people, do you go out and teach and travel?
I do. In fact, I'm doing more and more of it now with, you know, with the books and my pattern company. And most of the teaching I've done has been in the Midwest. And I go to, you know, quilt guilds and to quilt shops. I've been in Texas and I've taught classes there, but I'm really excited to go to quilt market in Salt Lake City because I haven't been out west. So that's kind of new territory for me. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Very fun. You have to check out all the shops out there. There's quite a few shops in around the convention center area. So it's pretty easy to get a feel for, you know, what they're doing there. Angela, this has been so much fun.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed this.
Your book is absolutely lovely, and everybody can visit Angela at Applique After Hours. I'm going to stop by and say hello in Salt Lake.
Okay, I'm looking forward to meeting you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We will be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make 1, 2, or many more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases. Quilt along with us in 2016. Join our third annual quilt along by making a quilt, a one block pillow, or all 4 projects featuring plus sign designs. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/quiltalong for a list of participating bloggers and designers, and to see photos of what staff members and other readers are sewing. Share your photos on social media using the hashtag APQQuiltAlong to join the fun.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Very excited to chat with a new Moda designer who has a ton of experience in creating amazing artwork already. So we're really excited to have her working with Moda now. Stacy Bloomfield of Gingerbur, who is a illustrator and it just makes amazing work. So anyway, we're going to talk to Stacy. Hey, Stacy, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Pat.
You know, tell me a little bit about your background, because as an illustrator, you, you know, have you just drawn since you can remember, like the beginning of time?
Yes, actually, one of my earliest memories is of me in church with my parents, holding my dad's big kind of fountain pen, the real heavy kind. And the only way they could keep me still at church was if I had his pen and I was drawing on the brochures for church, you know. So that's probably my earliest memory. And gosh, that's all I've ever really wanted to do is draw. Yeah.
It just always gives me goosebumps when I hear people have, you know, it's like you're born to do something and you're actually doing it. It's just, I think that's such a wonderful gift that, that you have. Your work is just so adorable. How do you, have a lot of animals, so kind of describe your style. I mean, has it changed over time?
Yeah, well, I would say my style is all about the details. So for me, I love drawing animals. I kind of look at animals and their figures as kind of a blank palette to explore texture and pattern work. And I think that's kind of what would generally define Gingerbur. It's something that kids can enjoy, but parents also enjoy looking at too. I mean, that's what got me started with my line was early on when I was pregnant with my first child, I was looking for artwork for her nursery and I couldn't find anything that just didn't feel like too sweet. Do you know what I mean? Just a little bit too pastel and just not quite my taste. So I have a background in art. I have a degree in graphic design and fine art. So I decided to make my own work, and this is just kind of what was born out of like what I wanted for her room. And gosh, that was almost 8 years ago now, which is crazy to think. And ever since then, just the progression of Gingerbur, I mean, it's still animals. It's still a lot of focus on line work and detail, but really also just, I don't know, trying to approach it in a new way with every collection. So that's kind of the gist of it. Yeah.
So tell me, what was the print that you did for her room or his room? Was it a boy or a girl? I'm sorry.
It was a girl. My first child, I have three now, but my first child, her name is Violet. Violet Bloomfield. So she sounds like a storybook character, I guess. And it was the first thing I drew for her was actually a little seahorse. And we still sell that seahorse now. I sell it in a flashcard set. So it's, yeah. And I, if you look at the earliest thing I've ever done, I mean, gosh, you can see how it's a lot more refined now. I mean, I drew that first thing on like a manila envelope and a Sharpie, which is so funny. And now, you know, I have better tools, you know, better pens, better paper, I would say. But gosh, you know, it's just when inspiration strikes you, you draw it wherever you can. So,
yeah, that's right. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, we have little scraps of paper. I'm not, you know, super organized. Do you keep that stuff? So I'm curious. Do you keep like all your little things somewhere?
I keep everything. I am like, I am so, it looks like I'm a pack rat, but really I just draw so much. And this is the first year I've ever kept an actual sketchbook. I've always just drawn on scraps of paper and just white printer paper. And I do, I have, well, my husband has tried to help me organize it, but really it just, I draw so frequently, it just ends up in piles and piles. So yeah.
Well, good. I feel better because mine is just like a mess. I'm not a big drawer. I sort of paint with fabric instead. But when I do sketch, it's just whatever I have. Like it could be the notes I'm doing right now could have stuff on them. So,
Absolutely.
now we're going to talk about the fabric line, but first, tell you are already a lover of fabric. I mean, you are making finished goods, which have your designs on them, but you told me that you actually have a small fabric collection already.
I do. You know, it's funny. I love fabric. I mean, you could ask my mom, even as a child, like my happiest time is whenever we would go into like Michael's or a craft store or anything that had fabric, and I just would ooh and ah over it. So I just have always been that person that just buys a yard of fabric just because it's beautiful, and then I never want to cut into it. Do you know what I mean? Because it's so perfect. I always want to save it for the perfect project. So when we were actually moving into my current studio, my husband kept pulling out tub after tub, and I was like, "What are in all these tubs?" He's like, "It's all of your fabric, Stacy." And he's like, "You gotta do something with it." So I'm very selective of cutting into like my favorite fabrics. You know what I mean? But yeah, I have quite a collection, Japanese fabrics and fabrics that are printed by some of my like colleagues and who do illustration and fabric design, and some vintage fabrics, some vintage sheets, things like that.
Well, I can relate. I think quilters can relate, in general, because I can't tell you how many fabrics. I just want to buy it just to look at it,
Exactly.
So now your work is your drawings and your things on Gingerbread are a lot of black and white. You do have other colors, but tell me about the process of sketching your animals. I mean, I am just in love with your animals. These
Thank you.
just, oh, they're just amazing. The barn owl is, you have a couple of different owls, but tell me how you build out a character.
Well, the first thing I do is I kind of try to start with the form of the animal because, like I said, I kind of look at like maybe whether it would be where the feathers would be or the texture of the fur. I kind of look at that as a blank palette to explore different like line relationships, different, textures, things like that. And so I first kind of identify the form, and then I think about the scale of whatever, design I'd like to have inside that animal. Because sometimes, scale can make a difference too. Like the barn owl that you mentioned, it has a lot of tiny little scallops in it. At least one of my owls does. And it's very tedious to create such tiny scallops. So then whenever you look at it from far away, it just has a lot of texture and it adds a lot of depth, I feel like, to the illustration. So I don't know. I kind of just go from there. And honestly, for me, drawing is just, it's like my happy place. It's so therapeutic and I almost don't even have to think about it. I just draw what feels right for me. And, it's just a fun exploration of texture and scale, and then deciding how to interpret like the black and the white, because I feel like any good design boils down to how it looks in black and white. At least that's how I was taught by my drawing professor. It has to work in black and white first before you can go forward. And that's just how I approach it. And then I'm always just trying to find new ways to use line work. There's just so many things you can do. So I kind of feel like it's an endless possibility. So.
Well, I think that your first fabric line with Moda is called Thicket.
Yes.
And we are going to be lucky enough to have your animals on fabric. How big are the animals on your prints?
On the prints, well, let's see. We have a couple of different panel sizes, which is exciting. So we have, let's see. I should know the exact inch.
Oh,
Okay.
I see it right here. Actually, it's like 9 by 11, looks like some of
Yeah.
them, and
Yes.
then 18 by 22, something like that.
Yes, that's right. So what's nice about it is like the bigger panels, you could actually cut out and match with a corresponding pattern fabric to make maybe shaped animal pillows, or just to make throw pillows, or to incorporate into a central block in your quilt if that's something you're interested in. Or with the smaller ones, there's just loads of possibilities. You could, embroider onto them. You could applique them onto something else. You could just enjoy them as are in black and white, just making like a block quilt or a lap quilt. There's just a lot of possibilities, and that's what's fun.
Yeah, and then your beautiful line work is interpreted in the single prints. So
yes.
That I just love the curves that you have. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. Those are so cool.
Thank you. That's one of my favorites too. The inspiration for that came, gosh, there's an illustration I did maybe 5 years ago, and it's just called The Bear, and it's just a basic black and white bear, but that's where I first started using this kind of curved line pattern, and gosh, it just struck a chord with me, and it's something I really enjoy using now in a lot of my different illustrations, so...
So we will be seeing this. This is showing to shops now for them to order. So it'll be a couple months before it's in the stores.
Yeah, I think it'll be shipping in June, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds good. So
delivery in August,
you also
actually,
have a physical store, right?
Yes, I do. I do. We actually just opened. I actually live in a little town called Springdale, Arkansas. It's in Northwest Arkansas. And what we have is we have our studio space. And in the front of it, we've partitioned off a little storefront. And we actually just had our grand opening 2 weeks ago. And yeah, people come in and shop and look at the gingerbread goods in person. And soon they'll be able to hopefully cut some fabric here too, if that's what they're interested in. And then we do all of the work for gingerbread behind that partition that goes back into our studio space.
Right. Because that's a lot to do finished goods, because you have your things printed on tote bags, you know, on material, but also on paper and note cards. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Like 30 seconds. What's your favorite pop of color you'd add to the black and whites right now?
Ooh, gosh. Probably yellow is like my go-to. Like yellow is just like my power color. I love yellow. Black, white, and yellow I feel like can be really modern and minimalist and graphic and just beautiful. It works really well together. But if people aren't yellow, obviously turquoise, because who doesn't love turquoise? I think turquoise is just a beautiful blender color. So
very cool. Well, Stacy, this has been so much fun, and I can't wait to get some of your fabric. I'm going to buy it all. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you so much. That means so much. I appreciate it. It was so fun talking to you.
Well, I will. Are you going to be in Salt Lake? I forgot to ask you.
I am. This is my first time. So I'm excited to kind of learn the ropes. So I hope to see you there.
I will see you there. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me for a fun video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Luck. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project with me. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for the price of one. That's a full year free. Every issue is packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, detailed photography, complete materials lists, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today at allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Dreamy quilts. When you think of that, you might think of a particular style, a particular look. And Lydia Nelson just nails that look over and over again with her projects and her, she has a book even by the name. She writes out on Instagram. And I'm just super excited to talk about quilts that are soft and gorgeous. And she has some fabric lines coming out too, a fabric line with Moda. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit, getting a little sneak preview since it's just getting announced. Hi, Lydia. Thank you for being here.
Hey, Pat. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I'm really excited because I don't tend to personally work in like soft colors, although I want to. So I love looking at soft colors. It just, you know, it's very happy. There's just, and you have a gorgeous style to your work.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I really enjoy the soft colors because I feel like it gives it a really timeless and classic look. So I think that's probably why I fell in love with working in those soft colors. So, yeah, I really enjoy it. And
I want to get a little bit of a backstory, just a real short one, because you actually came at all of this, from a different career path. You started out more in a businessy kind of thing. How did you end up, sort of working to create have a creative business?
Yeah, I feel like I came about it in a really roundabout way. When I graduated from college, I had my first job doing logistics. For a corporate home office. And I was planning to go to law school. And halfway through that first year, I ended up marrying my husband when he was on leave from Italy. He was in the Army, and the Army really steered us in all kinds of different directions. So I felt like pursuing law school was a little bit too tricky because I could never guess where we were going to be the next year and then, assume we were going to be there long enough. So we were stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas one year, and I felt like that was serendipitous because they have a great apparel design program. And I started a master's in apparel design, and I just loved it. I loved learning about the textiles, how they're made, making garments. I was actually 7 months pregnant when I started. My husband was deployed in Iraq, and I had to make a maternity pair of pants, and that was really hard to sew a maternity panel. It was harder than I would have thought, but I loved it, so...
That's so funny that you your class assignment was to make pants and you had to make the extra hard project ones because
I know. I was like, I should get extra credit for this because it was so hard. Like the panel was nylon and the pants were, cotton canvas. It was tricky.
So did you always feel like you were made to create after you started sort of exploring that?
Yeah, I did. So I feel like I really got the sewing bug after I started that. But then my husband redeployed early during that deployment because he got into Army Aviation School, and that was always a dream of his to fly helicopters. So we moved a few weeks after I gave birth to our first son. I had to leave after the first semester. We moved down to Alabama, Fort Rucker. But I really found that was still with me, that desire to sew and create. And so I had a lot of time to just me and my son. My husband was flying all the time. And so I read all kinds of magazines and blogs, and I really continued to pursue it in my own way, even without the guidance of a curriculum at school. And I just, I just loved it. So,
yeah, I love that you sort of made your own degree by learning, because you obviously love to learn.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that's exactly how I would put it, is that I feel like I gave myself, a second bachelor's in graphic design because, as an artist and a designer, I wanted to make sure I was able to interpret my vision as best as I could. And so, I taught myself, a lot of Illustrator and InDesign and quilting software and photography. And I really feel like that helps me get to where I am right now.
Yeah, I really like cruising your photos because they're so beautiful. You write out on Instagram under Dreamy Quilts so people can find you. Tell me how you approach a new project, because you came at this as a business person. And so you were looking to create things that were unique. So how do you build a design?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think this is where, in fact, my business background comes into play for me. I find when I'm wanting to make a new quilt, I want to offer something that's new in the market where there's a need. When I was interviewing different quilt shop owners before I went to my first quilt market, one shop owner told me there's very little that's new at market. And, I didn't know if that was true or not. I had never been. But what she meant was so many of the patterns were updated versions of other things that somebody had already done. And, I don't know, if I think that's true or not, but I think that it's really important to make a pattern that's not been done before. One of my quilt patterns, Shabby Chic, was inspired, in fact, by a knitting project that I did
My mom owns a little yarn store in Rogers, Arkansas, called Mockingbird Moon, and I was sewing a quilt or a blanket for her, and it was made of 10 knitted squares and 10 vintage linen blocks. And it was so cool because over the seam you put this vintage lace, and it just was such a good mix of old and new. And I thought, man, why can't we do this in the quilting world? And it turns out that you can, and you can do it really easily. And so in that pattern, I share how to integrate vintage linens. I've got all kinds of old pillowcases that my Nana embroidered, and vintage lace. And it's just a good way to kind of get those out and really make something that can't be replicated, I feel, by somebody else, because nobody has the exact same stash of linens you have.
That's
really
a neat thing to do, because, you know, we do have a lot of old linens. I mean, a lot of people have from family that they want to remember.
Yeah.
Do you have a tip for working with the old linens? I mean, do you need to pre-wash them? Is there something special?
Yeah, you know, I try and be really careful what they're made out of. You know, I obviously wouldn't use anything that's a little bit, that's too fragile, but generally I stick to the linens that are 100% cotton. If I do find some old lace, usually it's like, you know, sometimes pillowcases would have that crocheted edge on them. I'll use that and just make sure that it's something, you know, that can be thrown into the washing machine. But I also find that I personally, with my style, I don't want to be too concerned about it kind of wearing a little bit, because I like that aged look a little bit. And, you know, and that's really what it is. It's something, you know, that's been, it's an aged piece of linen. That would be my only tip, is just to be conscious of, you know, the washing ability of what you're putting in there.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, if it's too precious, then don't put it on something you're going to wash, because you don't want to mess it up.
Oh, my God.
You know, people get like, ah. And now you have written a book called Dreamy Quilts, and it has all kinds of just gorgeous projects in it. Can people get that from your website?
It's on my website, lydianelson.bigcartel.com, but it's also through, you know, United Notions and Checkers and the publisher's website. And I think it is on like Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well. So I think there's all different avenues for somebody to purchase it.
Yeah. So tell me about your fabric line. Like, we're getting a sneak peek. It's because we don't. It's not out there. You showed the Salvage Edge, which had. So that's. I knew. So tell me about it.
Well, it's called Darling Little Dickens, and it's with Moda, and I think Moda just did a beautiful job in creating the finished product, and I'm so happy with it. I got my first batch of it, or the yardage last week, and I'm so happy with it. And I was really inspired to create a line that really translates well for both boys and girls. When I was pregnant with my boys, I have all three boys, by the way. But it was really hard for me to find something that was not too girly, pink or purple flowers. But then also, like, for boys, a lot of this stuff was a little bit, you know, I couldn't find something that was timeless, that wasn't too cartoony. So this is, I feel like, a good mix of timeless prints, colors. They're pretty neutral. So, like, you know, you don't have to wait to find out what the gender is to start making a quilt. It really is something that lends itself to both boy and girl. The prints are, you know, pretty versatile as well. So, you know, if you have those parents that are like super patient and don't wait to find out the gender until birth, which I don't know how people do that, not patient enough. But these are good. This is a really great line for just getting going without, you know, knowing if it's a boy or girl. And so I'm really, really happy with the classic timeless look of it.
Oh, exciting, exciting. I will be really looking forward to seeing the actual pictures of it. Because it just sounds so cute. I have a lot of boys in my family too. So nephews and brothers and those kind of things to make quilts for. We have, I have about like a minute. I want to talk about color palettes. Cause you can kind of segue from what we were just talking about. What are your thoughts about pulling together a color palette?
Well, for me, color and prints in a quilt should be really special. I find that when you're a little bit more selective with the amount of colors and prints you integrate into your quilt, it can look a little bit more timeless, which is what, of course, my style is and what I like. So what I would challenge somebody to do is if they're used to making a quilt, you know, every block is a different color or different print, try limiting yourself maybe to one either solid background color or minimalist print, you know, like pin dot, something simple, and really only picking a few different prints that, you like and just try experimenting with that and seeing how the look of the quilt changes. And you may find that you really like limiting yourself, because I feel like it allows your piecework to speak for itself instead of, you know, maybe being inundated by prints. And so that, I guess that would be my one suggestion or tip that I would maybe try out.
That's a really good one. That is really, really good, because people can experiment and then you could try, you know, maybe work in series, kind of like try it with limited, try adding a little bit more, see what it looks like. That'd be really fun, Lydia.
Yeah. I think it would be. Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been really great. I can't wait to see more of your work, and your photography of your projects is just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. This is so much fun.
We're going to take a break for American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Join American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, giveaways, and more. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. The website During Quiet Time is written by Amy Friend, and she is just a fabulous designer. I have been buddies with her for a while, and it is so fun to be able to get her on here and talk a little bit about her brand new book, which I am just over the moon about, called Intentional Piecing. So hi, Amy. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Pat. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so first of all, I have to say congratulations on your ribbon for your quilt. Tell me about that quilt that won a ribbon at QuiltCon.
Oh, thank you. I recently won a second place in the piecing category at QuiltCon for my quilt Pointed Statement. It's a paper-pieced quilt of my own design using a lot of different shaped triangles. It's a repeated block, but the triangles are all different sizes, some upside down, some right side up, in shades of melon on a light gray background.
It is gorgeous. It is gorgeous. Were you actually at QuiltCon?
I wasn't, but I was lucky to have some friends there who took pictures and shared them on Instagram right away for me, so I knew what I won in what category.
I know, because you do a lot with the Modern Quilt Guild. You were the organizer that corralled all of us for doing the charity quilts.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been a member of the charity group for the last couple years now, and this will be my third time helping to coordinate the QuiltCon Charity Quilt Challenge.
That was a lot of fun to do. It was, and you did a great job. Keeping everybody on track.
It's tricky because, you know, I was out here in Massachusetts and they're out in California.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of emailing. Mm-hmm. So I'm, before we talk about your book a little bit, you have a very deep background in art history. You worked as a museum curator. I mean, you have a lot of depth there in looking at things in a certain way for what you did for your business. How do you see that playing into the work you do now?
I've always enjoyed drawing, and so when I studied art history, my original goal was actually to study studio art, but the studio art classes were taken that semester, so I started with my art history requirements, and I fell in love with Islamic art history, and that was my first introduction to art history, and I continued to be an art history major, but I still love drawing and designing, and I did take a lot of classes in that area, too. So for me, paper piece block design allows me to draw. I can draw images of, like in my book, I have an owl, let's say. I drew a paper piece owl pattern, so I still get to draw this way, but then sew it in fabric. So I don't know how much the art history training has, I guess it does. It has helped me with understanding the modern aesthetic, and I do enjoy modern quilting, so I think that maybe my background in art history has helped me to grasp that.
Yeah, it's funny to think about what we did before and how it plays on what we do now, you know, because sometimes there are some little things that's like, yes, that's why I do it that way.
It's all just now, a part of me now, so it just comes out, and I don't think I'm aware of it.
Right. Yeah. So second nature, everything just happens. I started reading the introduction, or I read the introduction of your book, and the first thing you talk about is remembering wanting to make things as a kid. That just shot me back in time when I read that. I thought, you know, I didn't use those same words, but I would get bored. So basically, I was like, what can I do? So when you used to follow your mom around and ask, what can I make, what did she tell you?
I feel so bad that I did that now that I have three kids of my own. But I clearly remember following her around the house as she was doing her chores saying, I want to make something, but I don't know what. I think sometimes she would give me a little direction, like let me go through her fabric. We had a big trunk, an old steamer trunk in our living room with her fabric in it, and she would allow me to go through it and use what I wanted. We always had art supplies in the kitchen. She'd let me use the hot glue gun, the scissors, you know, whatever I wanted. And I remember there was a little bookshelf outside of my bedroom door when I was a kid that had a book about kids' crafts. And I know when I got really desperate, I'd go and grab that book and look for an idea and make something. I'm not sure if she ever gave me a direct idea of what I could make, but she always made sure I had supplies available. And she encouraged it, and she put up with the messes at the table.
I love that you had art supplies in the kitchen. It's like
that's where they are in my house now, too. I think it's just carried over. I have two cabinets in my kitchen dedicated to rubber stamps and, you know, pipe cleaners and everything that the kids want to play with, because that's where, you know, I spend my time at home, and that's where they spend their time. So,
yeah, we should all have that. I think that's fabulous. When, you know, you have, I just love your designs. I love the work that you do. And it's a lot of, I think, what makes your work, which is what your book is about, is the fabrics that you picked. So, I mean, did you know that about yourself before you started thinking about your book?
That's always been my favorite thing to do, picking fabrics and patterns that really highlight the other. You know, if I start with a fabric collection and think, like, how can I make this fabric look really good by choosing the right design or creating the right design, or the other way around. Like, I have this pattern I designed. What fabric can I pick that will really make my pattern look great? But it was actually Suzanne Woods from Lucky Spool who came up with the title of the book, and we had been talking about book ideas. And she said, you know, she looked through my work and said, well, I think what you really do well is, you know, fussy cutting or finding those fabric choices. I said, you know, I think that might be it. That is what I really like to do. And we went from there. So I have to give her credit for that.
Now, when you're, you know, I'm totally fascinated, because how do you purchase fabric in order to have the right stuff? You know, that's when I'm like, every once in a while, I'm going around trying to find something really special to put somewhere, and I'm thinking, I just don't have the right fabric. I have not been buying the right stuff. What is your thought process?
I don't know. Maybe I hoard a little bit too much. I do have a little section in the book about what to stash and why, and I like to purchase fat quarters of quirky prints, you know, and it has to be something I love. I never buy fabric that I don't really like, and I think that's important. It's important to know what you really like, because if you really like it, you're going to really like it in 10 years, too. So I always pick things I really like, and just a fat quarter, if it's quirky or unusual, and I can't imagine, you know, using a ton of it, but think that could be just perfect for something, and I don't need to know what, but I'll just get a fat quarter. But things like blenders or textured solids, tone-on-tone prints, I like to use those a lot, and I get half yards of those. And then I never tend to buy larger prints or great amounts of yardage for anything else. Those I'll buy for the project when I'm ready to sew, because I want to have just the right thing. I want to be able to select it for my project.
Now that's a good plan. That's I'm just looking at your teepee quilt in here, and you have the little fox next to the one teepee. That is so cute. It's like
I had fun with that.
Yeah, I mean, it just so how are you sorting this fabric? I mean, so that you can find what you're looking for.
I have my fabrics rainbow order pretty much, but then I have pulled out of those a stack of low volume prints, a stack of like texty fabrics, and then quirky Japanese prints are on their own.
Yeah.
and then I pretty much, you know, keep those things where they are and remember where they are, and it works.
So tell me a little bit about one of the projects in the book. Which one do you want to talk about just for a minute?
Oh, gosh, it's hard. Well, right now I'm running a little challenge on my blog for the Tell Me a Story quilt. It's a fun project. It's the beginning of the book. It's an introduction to fussy cutting, basically. It's a paper piece block, but it's a very easy-to-sew beginner paper piece block, and I walk you through each step of paper piecing it with fabric placement and everything. And the idea is to find a fussy cut for the center of the block and then a border fabric that goes around it to tell a story. So, for instance, on my quilt, there's a little bunny that's sitting on a moon, and then the border that goes around it is like a citron background with little white stars on it, the night sky. You know, it could be very simple like that. And so I'm challenging my blog readers to make a block and to share it on Instagram using the hashtag intentional piecing block or the hashtag and the hashtag tell me a story quilt. And then I'm going to draw a random winner in June for two bundles of fabric.
Ooh.
So it's a fun quilt where you get, so there'll be two winners, I should clarify, one bundle each. So it's a fun block to make, and you can make up your own little stories. And what I was trying to show with this project is a way to use your fussy cuts, you know, those things that you hoard, and a way to tell a story with your fabric. It's really fun because it keeps you engaged in your project, and then you can share it with others that way. And, you know, I envision someone sitting with their grandchild, like, telling stories, looking at the quilt.
Oh, that sounds like an incredible amount of fun. I love it. I think I should probably do that with you. I should probably
I'm starting again because I decided I wanted to do it, too. So I'm going to make another quilt, and I think I'll donate it to a charity when I'm done.
Yeah. Oh, so fantastic. And they can find this at your website, duringquiettime.com. And it's the April 11th is the day that you wrote about that. And I'm sure you got it on your sidebar or somewhere, too. So, Amy, this has been so much fun.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, everybody look for Amy's book, and you can get it, you know, get all the info at her website for intentional piecing and join along. This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Visit allpeoplequilt.com. Sign up for the newsletter so you get all the information as soon as it happens. And you can go over to my website at patsloan.com and join me where I am on Facebook and all the other places. And we'll see you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.